this play kind of starting to feel like a miniature deformed version of myself that just keeps following me around and like hitting me in the balls with like a tiny little hammer. I'm sorry, what was the question?
The Cut Print Film Podcast number 50 is reveling in the pomp of the 2015 Academy Awards. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Hi, Mr. and Mrs. Internet. Welcome to the Cut Print Film Podcast, episode 50.
Woo!
I'm Jeff Rollins.
I'm Dave Costell.
And I'm Chris Oscars Evangelista.
Oh, that must mean it's our Oscars extravaganza.
Hey, let me unbutton my tux. It's getting a little tight.
Tighten that cummerbund, Dave.
The Oscars just ended.
That's right.
And
it's very late and we're all tired.
We're exhausted, but we're here to give you our hot takes, our cold takes,
yes,
our hot cakes,
yeah, our flapjacks, and
our cold sores.
We're skipping the Chappie after party to record this podcast.
Yes. Chappie invited us personally, but we said sorry.
So we just got through a four-hour Oscars telecast, is my ass in flames.
Believe it or not, this was not the longest Oscar cast, even though it felt like it. The longest one, it was in 2002, and it was 4 hours and 30 minutes long.
Ooh, that's unacceptable.
Yes.
I was praying for this thing to end. Put it out of its own misery.
It definitely dragged or drug. What's the word?
Drag.
I wish I was drugged while watching this.
You can be drugged, but you're dragged. I don't know.
Well, this thing started off with a wonderful song and dance number from Neil Patrick Harris, with some cameos from Anna Kendrick and Jack Black.
Which, those two things don't go together.
Fund my movie, Kendrick Black?
No.
It's about them getting married.
All right. That sounds like a terrible film.
Much like this intro. I hated this intro. Dave, I know you hated it.
Yeah.
Chris, you seem to like
it. I don't know. I'm a fan of catchy musical numbers. I thought it actually started off catchy. I think, Neil Patrick Harris has a good singing voice. But then the minute Jack Black came out, I was like, I'm done with this. It just threw a wrench in the whole.
I wonder how fast he'll raise his eyebrows. I love Jack Black.
Can we just give up on Jack Black at this point?
Hollywood has, I thought, until I saw him tonight.
Well, he's also in the upcoming Goosebumps film, so that'll be his big comeback.
And he has a HBO series coming out soon. I hope you guys are ready for that.
I'm not at all.
Is it anything related to Tenacious D?
No, it's like I don't know.
Well, at least there's that. Because I'm certainly tired of that act.
I just hate the whole, let's bring Broadway to the Oscars thing.
I feel like the biggest flaw in this Oscars and just the Oscars in general is they're geared towards audiences that don't exist anymore. It's like, musicals are not what they used to be. And it's like, can we just stop with the musical numbers? We don't really, I like musicals, but they're not what, Hollywood doesn't pump out musicals like they used to anymore. So it's just, it's kind of weird.
That reaction ties into the first point I want to make with this entire telecast is that the musical performances were just the pits.
Yeah.
They were the low point. Even though there were a lot of low points to this show, the musical numbers just scraped the bottom every single time.
I mean, I know a lot of people on the intranets loved the Lego Movie song. Staging, it was fun to see, I guess. I don't know. I'm not as blown away by that song.
It looked like a nightmare. it was a nightmare.
It was like the Nickelodeon Awards. Like someone's going to get slimed any minute.
And it seemed like they were off time at parts. Like you couldn't really hear the music.
It felt like the whole night was having problems like that. Like people kept flubbing everything they were saying. The sound mixing was atrocious.
That ties in with the musical performances being terrible, aside from just not being very good songs to begin with. Right. But that Lego Movie song in particular, Everything Is Awesome, that reminded me of a really, really bad SNL performance where they can't hear the monitors.
Yeah.
And the music's too low on our end, the television viewers' end. It was just almost unlistenable.
But in general, I also feel like everyone misses the point of that. That song's existence in the film is supposed to be like ironic that like these people are living their lives as like, you know, sheep in this Lego world, and everyone's like, what a fun song. It's like, no, they're missing the point of this song.
Yeah, it's like they're mindless. It's like everything isn't awesome. That's the whole point of the song, and nobody gets that. It just turned into a cultural phenomenon where everyone's like, oh, this is awesome.
It's like personally, it's like reading 1984 and being like, man, that Big Brother is really cool.
He's
like,
got something going. I personally think this is a terrible song, the Everything is Awesome song. I also thought
it's funny in the movie, like in the context of the movie.
Because it's supposed to be ironic. Yeah. Like, removed from the movie, it doesn't fit. It's
out of context.
And the real mix sounds a lot better.
Well, I'm sure. There were other performances. There was the unnecessary post in memoriam performance that they do every year. I believe last year Bette Midler came out and flapped her arms and sung what's the theme from Beaches.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Song. I forgot about that.
Yeah, Wind Beneath My Wings.
They do not need a song following the memo. I also didn't like how it was like drawings. Like, I liked how in previous years, the memorial things, it's like clips.
Like,
it's better to see these people in motion. Just seeing, like, photos, it's kind of like robs.
Well, they didn't have time, man. They had to fit Lady Gaga in.
Ugh.
All right, well, that was the one technically good performance, Lady Gaga with a beautiful voice. And everybody always forgets that this is a classically trained artist just happens to do pop music.
I had no idea. When she came out and started singing, I was like, oh, wow, she has an amazing voice. Sound just like that. That's an actual clip from the show.
That's a panty dropper. I just dropped mine and yours. Yeah, this Lady Gaga performance was it was good, but I hate The Sound of Music.
Oh, God, I know.
And again, who is this performance for? Because anybody that was a fan of The Sound of Music is dead.
Oh.
What? I love music. Remember? I'm Jeff Music.
Yeah, but I kind of like this. Like, I like them playing like
tribute to older films. In a show that wasn't already bloated to death.
Yeah,
like,
and that's the issue.
Like, it just didn't fit. Also, it felt like it came right after that big common John Legend song, which, again, I don't like that song either, but I acknowledge that the performance was powerful enough that it brought the fucking theater to their feet. And then it's like, anyway, back to 50 years ago when white people ruled. Like, it felt so, it was poorly placed to be. It just shouldn't have been there.
You're right. And those were the two good performances. I use good generously.
To suggest,
John Legend is talented. Common is talented. But that song is terrible.
I thought the performance of the song was good. Like, the way they staged it, and now at the end where it just becomes like an a cappella rendering. That was good. The song itself, I fucking hate. I just don't like the lyrics. They're goofy. And
they're very basic. Yeah. It's very basic ideas presented as though it's profound, which is totally not what Common is even known for. Right. He's known for as being this sort of poetic type rapper, and this is so, middle school journal.
It's very much
lyric
like
entries.
It's very much like a movie end credit song, which exactly is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at the same time, though, their speech when they won, that was a good
beautiful
speech.
Yeah, it was
an
great
excellent speech.
There were several great speeches tonight, and they were some of the high points. Am I missing any other musical performances? I think there was one other.
Well, Adam Levine did a song.
Boy,
from,
was that just Drek.
That was, I believe,
Begin
was a,
Again.
Man, that was a fucking like waiting room doctor's office song. Like, I don't, why am I listening
to
this?
Some country song.
Oh, yeah, the cowboy.
Yes, Tim McGraw came out in a tuxedo, cowboy hat, and cowboy boots.
Right.
And I sprayed my television with a hose.
Blasted the screen right in.
God.
I think wasn't there one more?
There was one other female performer. I don't remember who she was. I don't know what the song was. That's how much of an impact it had upon me.
You said this up front, but it was a bad year for original songs and movies.
Even the nominees were terrible.
That's what I mean.
I never liked the song category at the Oscars. It takes away it from. It does nothing to do with movies to me. It's just song, and I feel like the way they should do it is. Whatever song wins, they just perform that after it wins, and that's it. Just that, like, this is the winning song.
That
here
would
it
work
is.
Just fine for me. We'd actually cut 45 minutes from the entire show,
and it would save money. You wouldn't have to spend millions.
I think the problem is they don't know who's going to win. So
I guess
they would have to logistically
have them on retainer.
Five people.
They pick it, a few days in advance. I'm sure if the best song leaked, it wouldn't be the end of the world.
Didn't you see they had security guarding the ballots?
Yeah, that's true. They could do the song at the scientist portion because it kind of fits into that too.
Yeah, the winners are picked. I think they're picked like the Monday before the awards, so they could very easily just be like, "This is the best song. Yeah. Just do that."
I liked it last year because Karen O did the Moon song, and right. that was cool. There's always like one song that,
even if it's a song I like, I'm just like, I don't want to sit through this, you know?
Yeah. Here I am. That's your favorite song,
Rock
right?
Me Like a Hurricane. Yeah, that's the only song I ever want
to
hear.
That's an interesting song to have as your favorite.
It was on the Perfect Storm soundtrack.
Yes. It was on the Hurricane soundtrack with Denzel Washington.
I don't think either of those things are true. So Neil Patrick Harris hosted, and he bombed.
Yeah, what happened there?
I forget who tweeted it, but somebody tweeted something to the effect of, you can feel America falling out of love with Neil Patrick Harris as the show goes on, and it was wonderful. A really good tweet that captured exactly how I felt.
It was just weird, because he's a talented guy. He's hosted tons of stuff before, and he just... I don't think the problem so much was him as was the material.
Oh, that was some weak material. Is Bruce Valanche still writing for the Oscars?
If he is, he should be shot out of a cannon.
Get like a real comedian like Louis or even like Jerry Seinfeld would be a get
for this. I will even take Ellen DeGeneres writing material as long as she's not hosting.
Yes. It's just – and like to Neil Patrick Harris's credit, he – tried his best to sell that shitty material.
Yes, he did.
He was all in, but it just, there's not a lot you can do with pun names unless you're this show and your name is Dave Costell.
We can really shine a piece of coal into a diamond.
Yes, but you know, don't try it at home if you're not a professional at punny names.
Yeah, that it didn't work, and it seemed like he kept messing up his jokes. Like he did that thing where he came down the aisle asking, like, "Oh, who are you? Are you a seat filler?" And then he goes up to Steve Carell, and it seemed like he forgot to ask him if he was a seat filler. Like that was the joke, and he missed it.
But Steve Carell did save that bit just by being charming. Yeah. Steve Carell.
Like that bit, like I love the concept of that bit and just the way they did it, where he was like, "Oh, you're also a seat." Like, all right, enough.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah. That, like, I mean, I know this is really broad humor for just the broadest of audiences. Right. 100 countries was viewing this. Mm. And I get that. You can't have, alternative comedy happening at the Oscars, but. Man, oh man, the jokes have to be telegraphed so far in advance that from word one, I know what the punchline's going to be. Case in point, the big reveal at the end of the Oscars with Neil Patrick Harris's Oscar predictions. Did anybody think that these were not going to be...
Yeah. Someone on Slate was talking about how it was such a bad idea to do a magic trick, especially like in the context of his opening thing, which is all about how you can do anything in movies, and now you're doing this lame fucking trick where you obviously replace the envelope.
Right. No. Octavia Spencer was watching it the entire time. Didn't you see her mugging and winking at the camera?
I felt
such fun.
I felt bad for her just because, like, I felt like she really did not want to keep doing this bit, and he wouldn't let it. At the same time, even though it's a lame, corny joke, I think it could have worked had they just done it a little bit. Like, I like the idea that the list isn't the winners, it's what happened during the show. Like, I like that idea, but the fact that it was so drawn out, and, like, it's so drawn out, by the time he came out to do it, he had to fucking remind everyone what the bit was, because everyone was like, can we just go
home? Well, he kept doing that throughout the night, and it's like, all right,
that's what killed it. That's what killed it. The continual revisiting of the glass case, and, hey, Octavia Spencer, are you watching this? I loved that Robert Duvall was having none of it when he asked Robert Duvall if he was keeping an eye on Octavia Spencer, and he just stared at him. I loved that.
He could have easily just walked out at the end with an envelope and be like, here's my predictions, and read them. Like, we didn't need the whole...
Or even just, he did it, if he had just done it at the beginning of the show and then just brought it back at the end, that probably would have worked better. It's that, you're right, the constant, by the way, do you remember my pick? Like, all right, stop.
Yeah.
And you don't need the lockbox on stage. Like, just get rid of all that. It's just adding too much distraction to the joke itself, which...
I mean, aside from that, I like Neil Patrick Harris. I don't know how you could not like this man. He's charming. And even though he knew he was bombing, he wasn't breaking a sweat.
Yeah.
He was just plowing forward, much like I would probably have wished that I could do. But I'd be soaking through my tuxedo.
I mean, yeah, he was a professional about it. That's the best thing I can say about it. Like, if it were I up there,
oh, yes.
The minute I realized nothing I was doing was working, I'd be like, good night. Like, we're 10 minutes into the show. Good night, everyone.
I'd actually hook myself off the stage.
I'd open a trap door and fall through it.
It's
like
funny.
The Phantom of the Opera.
I was thinking that when Jack Black walked up on the stage because that – as much as I hate Jack Black, like, that takes balls to just be sitting in your seat,
right.
Start singing, and then march up on the stage
it
and
did.
Keep doing it. Like, I was thinking,
it just
if
wasn't
I was
good.
Him, I would not be able to fucking do this.
Yeah. At the same time, he's been doing it for, like, years.
Yeah,
so.
But he's in a room full of people way more famous than him.
Yeah, like, I know.
That's as intimidating. Usually he's doing it as Tenacious D in front of a bunch of fat people at the Electric Factory.
Yeah. All right, so the awards themselves, a lot of hoopla.
Yes, it was a
lot of backlash.
It was a bad year for what we call film Twitter. Film Twitter is an unofficial group of just critics all on Twitter who are all friends with each other and all tweet each other, and they have very strong opinions about the Oscars this
year.
Yes,
and most people that are part of film Twitter were up in arms about Boyhood being almost shut out completely.
Right.
And Birdman taking home numerous top prizes because most of film Twitter hated Birdman.
Yeah, a large amount of critics, they not only do they not like Birdman, they call its director a fraud, which I don't understand.
It's an odd take, and I can't say anything about it because I don't understand what the accusation is.
Like, I want to have
almost like they're suggesting he's manufacturing his emotions,
but
which
I
don't understand.
But that's what like movies like
listen.
Movies aren't real emotion unless it's like a documentary. I mean,
I have a doctorate in manufacturing my emotions.
Yes.
And I don't get that sense from any of his films whatsoever. And 21 Grams, which was directed by Alejandro Iñárritu, who won Best Director and Best Picture. That's an okay film. It's not great.
I liked it.
Beautiful. I don't like that film at all.
I don't like that. I didn't like Babel.
Babel's horrendous.
Babel has a great cast, and I like parts of it. Like, I like there's a whole subplot about like a it's like a deaf girl.
Yeah.
Like, I liked that, but the execution of the film in general was just like.
But Birdman is a very very good film,
yeah.
And
it's so well put together. Like, the biggest complaint I keep seeing is people keep saying. Oh, it's a movie that keeps talking about how good it is, but it first of all, it doesn't. The whole joke of the film is that the main character is supposed to be a pretentious, you know, washed-up actor. And two, it's a really well-put-together movie. I don't understand this. It's
yeah, like, Iñárritu makes fun of himself in the movie,
right.
And I think that a lot of critics miss that.
Like, they think he's just being serious? Is that what it is? Like, they think he's trying to genuinely say he's...
I don't know how you could take that away from this, like, because it's so
obviously
self-critical.
I mean, it's a goofy sort of movie. There's a lot...
Even on stage giving acceptance speech after acceptance speech, he's so self-deprecating.
Right.
He's a charming guy,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's a charming guy. He obviously loves making movies. What is there to hate here?
I just... It's that fraud thing they keep saying that keeps... It baffles my mind. I feel like there's something... We were not privy to like
yeah.
Something happened. Like,
well,
he had a pyramid scheme, and all critics fell for it.
He was selling Amway products.
He signed a bunch of checks that weren't his.
Okay,
but he filled his name in on them.
That's a very long name to forge.
All
okay.
The accents.
So, I think the other side of that backlash against Birdman and Iñárritu winning all these top prizes is that all. Most of film Twitter and the film criticism community were pulling for Richard Linklater and Boyhood
yes.
to take a lot of the top prizes.
Yeah.
And it took none except for Best
Supporting
Actress,
yeah.
which was well
deserved yeah.
from Patricia Arquette.
Which may be the only award it actually deserved.
Yeah, I mean,
I agree.
We're all of us on the show have said time and time again we're not as impressed with Boyhood as a lot of people are.
I'm the most impressed.
Yeah, Dave is the most impressed of the three of us, and even he's not that impressed.
I really liked Boyhood, and
right.
I definitely think it should have been nominated for Best Picture
and Director and
Best Supporting Actress, but it's not the best film of the year.
Or decade, as many people are saying.
And not that the Oscars are actually
decade so far.
Yes.
Not that the Oscars are actually a
barometer.
Something to measure the quality of films against.
We should have said that at the top of the show. First and foremost, the Oscars are bullshit. They're not, you know, don't take it too
seriously. It's a fun, goofy little game, much like the Super Bowl. This is our Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It means just as much as the Super Bowl, absolutely nothing.
Right. The excuse to eat wings.
I've never really subscribed to that the Oscars are bullshit thing. More than I do this year. There's just something about the flatness of this ceremony that made me realize this is just...
When I was a kid, when I was growing up, I thought the Oscars were magical. But as I got older and more cynical and learned more about movies, I guess, it's just sort of just been like, you know, it's a popularity contest. Like, my two favorite films of the year are Blue Ruin and Under the Skin, and they're not even fucking nominated. So, I mean...
This is a good lead into what I wanted to talk about here, about the Oscars and their voting process and how this how a show like last night comes to be.
Right. Well, do you want to take a break real quick and we'll come back with that?
Yeah, we can take a break.
Let's take a break.
And then we'll school our ravenous listeners.
Right. Because I actually have two quotes from an Oscar voter that I also want to get into, so that'll be good.
Okay. We'll also give away the award for best podcast host.
Oh, I wonder if it goes to me, Jeff Rollins.
No.
I campaigned really hard.
Spoiler alert. Ah, come forth and let me tell you the tale of CutPrintFilm.com, a film review, editorial, and news website.
Have they got any loot there?
They do. Oh, I can't find it. Does anyone know where the loot is?
I have one right here.
CutPrint Film has a merry band of men.
Do they drop the beat?
Yes, they do! It includes More Like Radio, Joystick Jerks, and Anti-Fanboy.
Lemons, lemons, lemons.
Room.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm turning the wrong one down. There, that's better.
Well,
I'm turning Jeff down.
Thank you. Dave put a hex on me.
Chris, get off the drums and get over here.
I can't stop.
He's got drum fever. All right. So,
that was another joke that they blew by.
Oh, Miles Teller playing the drums?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did a reenactment of the Birdman scene toward the end of the film where Michael Keaton is stranded outside in his undies. And, you know, he walks past a hallway where there's a man playing the drums.
Right.
And Miles Teller is surprised, the man playing the drums in the hallway at the Oscars.
I love that idea. And
great idea.
It would have worked if he hadn't done he had to come back and do the not my tempo joke.
Yeah, we got it.
And it's like, that's clearly like a, oh, get it, wink, like, all right. It's just
a joke they already did beat to death on SNL.
Yeah, enough with that joke. Poor J.K. Simmons.
It's another broad humor event happening.
I thought that really could have worked if they actually had Neil Patrick Harris outside of the Staples Center and come in, like, because the paparazzi would have freaked out and they could have recreated that scene from the movie. Yeah.
But no.
Blown opportunity.
Who's got time for exciting things like that?
Okay, so... What I was talking about before we went to break was about how the Academy does their voting. And for all the categories other than Best Picture...
Which Academy? The Space Academy?
Yes. It's Space Camp.
Well, I believe they do it the same way they pick the Pope, and then they burn something in the chimney.
Yes. They burn a boy, and if the smoke is white, then we have a new Pope.
Yes. We have a new Best Picture winner.
If the smoke is red, the Pope has red hair. Okay, so
Pope Rollins.
Yeah, it's Pope Jeff Rollins, everybody.
Yeah, it's about time.
So for every category other than the Best Picture category, the Oscars, the Academy does a popular vote, much like we do with the president.
Right.
Before we get into the electoral votes, there's none of that here. There's no electoral votes.
No.
So it's just whoever had the most votes wins that category, and that's why you kind of get predictable stuff like Patricia Arquette.
Right.
She campaigned hard. And everybody said, yes, let's do that. Let's do that.
Yeah, that's another thing. There's a lot of campaigning.
Yeah.
It's like a politician. You have to literally – you got to go to lunches. You got to, you know, shake hands. You got to be like, please, you got to take photos with voters and stuff like that.
But Boyhood was at the top of all those press lists, which it doesn't seem like that had the impact they thought it would.
Yeah. Well, for Best Picture, they used to do the popular vote.
Right.
But they were finding that, you know, the movie campaigns with the most money behind them.
A.K.A. anything from the Weinstein Company.
Yes, exactly. If you had the Weinsteins behind you, you were probably going to win Best Picture. So in 2009, they changed this... the way they do the Best Picture, not only did they max out the nominees to 10, you can have a maximum of 10 instead of 5, they also changed the voting process to what is called instant runoff vote.
Right.
And are you familiar with this at all?
I am.
Because it's abysmal.
Benedict Cumberbatch's computer, Christopher, pick up
the Yes! his computer friend, Christopher.
Christopher.
No, his other computer friend, Chappie, does the vote tallying.
I am... Yeah, me.
So, instant runoff voting works like this. Everybody votes, and the film with the lowest number of votes, say it's 100 votes, gets knocked out.
Right.
And then everybody who had that film that was knocked out as their number one film, their votes are now retallied to their number two film. And it goes this way on and on and on and on.
It's an abysmal system.
It's horrible. And the only thing it does avoid is putting your money into the campaign, right, and swaying votes that way. But what you get with this process is movies in the middle ground end up becoming the best picture of the year.
Yeah, because if everybody puts Birdman at fourth,
right,
then it
just keeps gaining.
Yeah,
gaining,
then it can win.
Gaining and gaining all those runoff votes. Whereas a movie that might be polarizing, say American Sniper,
right,
some people aren't going to have that as their next pick if their top pick gets knocked off the list. So that ends up giving us these lukewarm films like, you know, not saying Birdman's lukewarm, but you get movies like Argo,
right,
which was just an okay film.
Yeah.
I mean... And The Artist,
right,
another okay film. The King's Speech, that's an Oscar film, if I've ever seen one.
Right.
It's Oscar bait.
They're very middle films.
Yes, like, you get these middle ground
films. They offend
films.
No one. They're easy to watch.
Yeah, they're in the middle of everybody's list. But because of this runoff vote process, it just keeps running the tally up and up and up. And then eventually they rise to the top of the list over films that actually challenge people.
Right.
Now, I will say that... The one caveat would be 12 Years a Slave, a film that challenged everybody that actually won.
At the same time, though, when for this year's awards, when Selma didn't get nominated for a lot of things, they reached out to anonymous Oscar voters, and one of them said, you know, why should we have to vote for Selma? We already gave them, quote-unquote, them 12 Years a Slave.
Which and that's proved, somebody that's part of the Academy, right?
Right? And
that
so,
is just ignorance beyond my comprehension.
Yeah, which leads me to so the Hollywood Reporter earlier in the week, they did an interview with another anonymous Oscar voter. And
It was Chris.
It was me. Sorry, everyone. Well, and I it was a long article, but I picked out two quotes from this Oscar voter. She's for Best Adapted Screenplay and Best Original Screenplay. These were her picks. So for Best Adapted Screenplay, she said, I put in the Inherent Vice screener, and it became apparent that it's a terrible, incoherent movie, so I turned it off. I thought it was not possible for me to hate something more than I hated The Master, but I hated this more. My pick would be for The Imitation Game. So right there, right, and yeah. Then so best...
So can we talk about that category before...
Let me just do a Best Original Screenplay, too, and then we'll just talk about the screenplay
okay.
category. So Best Original Screenplay, she said, I'm not voting for Nightcrawler. That was really unpleasant. With Foxcatcher, they said 7 words in the whole movie, and the rest of the was people staring at each other, so I'm not voting for that. I don't really get the sense of a screenplay with Boyhood. It's more of just a camera turned on once a year. Birdman and Budapest were both pretty clever, but I like Birdman more. So there you have it right there. That sums up. I'm not going to say that's the typical Oscar voter, because not everyone thinks
like that.
Well,
those won, right? Her picks won.
Yeah, so maybe she is the typical Oscar voter.
Maybe she's the only voter.
Just this one woman.
Well, there's just over 6,000 Academy voters, and I mean, that's a relatively small pool to pick from, especially for an award ceremony that, again, is broadcast to over 100 countries.
Right. A billion people watching about.
And we're essentially ranking art. And just statements like that,
It's just Oscar voters.
It blows your mind.
Oscar voters. I'm just going to jump back to the year Zero Dark Thirty was up, tying into our director series, director Catherine Bigelow. When that was up for Best Picture, a lot of Oscar voters were outraged because they thought it condoned torture, which, no, it doesn't, but we won't get into that right now. But so Oscar voters campaigned to other Oscar voters saying, don't vote for Zero Dark Thirty or we'll blacklist you, basically, because if you vote for this, you're approving torture. So that's what you have to face with the Oscars, just shit like that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the screenplays, because great screenplays to win.
So The Imitation Games has a lot of things going wrong for it.
Imitation Game, I'll say this, it has a clever structure. The way the film is structured is clever.
I'd call it fine.
Okay. Yeah, because the modern stuff with the detectives who are whoops, he's gay. That was terrible.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
Yeah, you found out Turning was gay.
Aside from the direction, though, I think the screenplay is its weakest aspect.
Imitation Game? That screenplay is a joke. At the end of the film, man, there's these titles that sum up thing, and one of them says, you know, Turning's machine, blah, blah, blah. And then it says, today we call them computers.
Yeah.
And I wanted to throw my shoe at the TV when I saw that.
I hated that movie.
It's one of those biopics where he just makes things up about touring that aren't real.
Everyone got so outraged when Selma bent some facts. The Imitation Game, 90% of that film did not happen. It's just total bullshit.
So then you have Inherent Vice, which is Paul Thomas Anderson adapting Pinchon, which is almost impossible.
Nearly impossible.
And he does it wonderfully.
Absolutely.
Even almost better than Pinchon. I don't want to get stabbed on the way out.
I won't stab you. I hate Pinchon. I love this film.
Right.
Yeah, and it's an amazing film. And just this category is the most disappointing to me because...
I mean, I would even jump back and say the fact that they didn't even nominate Gillian Flynn for her adaptation of her own book, Gone Girl, is just ridiculous.
But I think I would give it to Paul Thomas Anderson over Gillian Flynn.
I would say too, but just to not nominate her is just bullshit.
It's a little easier to adapt your own novel.
At the same time, though, she cut so much out of her own work, and I imagine that's also hard to do.
Now, granted, this screenplay is poop juice, as I like to use it as a technical term, an industry term.
Jeff, sometimes it's the poop juice that no one thinks about.
Graham Moore, the screenplay writer, gave an excellent speech.
Man, that speech was better than the screenplay. I wish the award had been for the speech.
Yeah, this speech gets a 10 out of 10 for me. We already talked about how the speeches were really, really good this year. But he just gave a really good, stay weird. Stay true to yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't apologize. He admitted to trying to commit suicide at one point.
Right, when he was 16.
And he's a gay man. Mm-hmm. And
Which is very relatable to touring, the suicide.
Right.
And,
and it's a shame that none of that came out through the screenplay.
Yeah,
it all came out through his acceptance speech.
Yeah, apparently. I wish that had been in the script because he could have used some of that. I mean,
yeah, which is strange because Keira Knightley has the best moments in that film.
Right.
So, and she's the character I would assume he least identifies with.
Yeah. Right. It's very strange, that screenplay. Like, all the strong points of it are what you would assume are, like you said, his least his weaknesses,
which is interesting.
And
but
that screenplay, it boils down like having Asperger's into like this like quirky, like, look at how goofy he was. Like, what the fuck is happening?
It's Sherlock touring,
right?
it's the Sherlock performance. That's another thing that bothered me.
Like, the biggest problem I have with that movie is the quote unquote twist at the end where you find out the reason he named the computer Christopher is because his friend who awoken, you know, sexual feelings in him back at school was named Christopher.
Well, there's the real twist, though. Why don't you tell us that?
Yeah, so I was like, that bothers me, but if that's what really happened, I understand why I did it. So I looked it up. No. At no point did Alan Turing name his computer Christopher after a dead friend.
And all of a sudden it makes sense. Oh, that is just as stupid as I thought it was.
Right. So that right there made me just write that whole film off in general.
Yeah.
So then Birdman wins Best Original Screenplay.
And so
over
Grand Budapest.
Yeah, Grand
Budapest.
And so we here at Cutprint Film, we're those weirdos who like Birdman, but I think I would freely admit the screenplay is the weakest aspect of
Absolutely.
Birdman.
Absolutely.
It's funny.
It's funny, but it's not, you know, it's nothing mind-blowing. That movie works for the performances and the direction and the editing, the way they edit it to look like one shot is a lot of people shit on that too, where it's just like, it's not really one shot. Like,
yes, we know.
No kidding. Like, no, I don't think anyone thought that.
Yeah. But those same people love the gimmick of Boyhood.
Right. Which was one shot for 12 years. I don't know how he did it. He never turned the camera off.
Oh, man. Okay, so as far as...
for original screenplay, I love Grand Budapest, but I still wish that had gone to Nightcrawler. I wish Dan Gilroy would have gotten that.
I was pulling for Grand Budapest in pretty much every category, and it won almost every category.
It won a lot.
Did it win the most? It seemed like it did.
I think so.
Birdman and Grand Budapest were the biggest winners of the night. They won the most awards.
Yeah.
I'm happy with that.
I am too.
I wish Wes Anderson had actually taken home one of those awards.
Me too, but I'm not going to say they're such different movies. I can't say that one deserves it more than the other. I'm pleased with the winner.
Yeah.
I'm not, overly thrilled. I would have been doing backflips if Wes Anderson won because I'm just a big Wes Anderson fan.
Yeah,
but
it just would have felt very...
more satisfying.
Yeah, satisfying.
But
yeah,
I'm so pleased that Birdman and Iñárritu winning. I think it's great. I think it's... but again, it's another movie about movies.
And they love that at the Oscars, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think that's a symptom of the instant runoff voting.
Right.
It's... Hollywood loves their movies about movies, so those movies are going to make these people's lists, even if they're not at the top, and the runoff voting pushes it to the top.
I was impressed that this is changing gears a little bit, but that Citizen Four
keep
won.
Your foot off the clutch, Dave.
Citizen Four took home the best documentary prize, which I didn't think would happen.
Yeah,
I did, and I'm so happy it did.
Yeah, I'm insanely happy it did because it's
an important movie,
especially see those people up on stage after like. They weren't sure if they
another
could.
Great speech.
Yeah.
Another great speech.
And Snowden's girlfriend was up on stage. I don't know if you guys knew
was that?
Yeah.
Then, okay.
So she was kind of accepting the award for him. I just love that won.
Yeah.
What was it up against? Finding Vivian Maier. Yeah,
I kind of would have preferred
that
one just because I liked
that was a
more.
Great movie. Yeah. But this is a much more important
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, I was pulling for Citizen Four more than Vivian Maier, which is a great documentary, but Citizen Four, like you said, it's the more important film. Yeah.
I didn't highlight this one, but that same voter, when asked about documentary, she said, "I'm not voting for Citizen Four because he's unlikable," as in Snowden. Like,
hey, lady,
that's how you judge your movie. Like,
oof, worthless.
So you want to talk about some of the other winners?
Yeah. What else was there?
Well, I mean, I feel like the three that seemed like a given. Were J.K. Simmons for supporting actor, Patricia Arquette for supporting actress, and Julianne Moore for Still Alice.
Yes, those are the three predictions. Three out of six I went for these Oscars, yeah. And those were the three I got right.
Dave owes Jeff and I $40 each because yes.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He was sure that Reese Witherspoon would win Best
Actress. Now, Dave just handed me a $40 bill. And I'm no economist.
Ironically, Reese Witherspoon is on the $40 bill. It just says President Witherspoon.
I don't think this is actual currency.
It's her wearing a powdered wig.
I assure you. And one for you too, Chris.
Oh, thanks.
So, those were the three givens. Julianne Moore gave a wonderful acceptance speech.
I was looking at photos of her after, like at the after party today, and she's getting the Oscar and great, and she just looks so happy, and it just made me feel good that, like, even though the Oscars are like a popularity contest, and they are just a little bit of bullshit, it is kind of refreshing when you see someone who really deserves it to just be so happy they got it, because Julianne Moore has deserved Oscars for years, and now she finally got one, and it's great to see her just happy about it. I loved her speech. That was,
and those three categories, they were the most deserving winners.
Were there even any surprises other than Birdman and Iñárritu?
Best actor.
Personally, I was surprised that Eddie Redmayne won. I really thought they were going to give it to Keaton just because, it's a big comeback movie, and Birdman was winning so much that night. It just seemed like, well, obviously Keaton's going to win now, but
I thought Redmayne was the front runner on that.
He was until Jupiter Ascending came out.
It's sort of like he and Keaton were sort of tied as front runners. It's like it was either going to be one or the other.
But basically, he gave an awesome speech too.
Yes, he did. No, he was pleased.
He was another one who was just giddy to be winning. And even though I personally don't think he should have won Best Actor, I can't be like, what a dick. He clearly was happy to have won.
Gave an incredible performance. He was great in a movie that was just okay.
I would argue it's a shitty movie, but I was...
All right, I somewhat liked the theory of everything.
The way you feel about Imitation Game is the way I feel about Theory of Everything.
Okay, fair enough.
I think they're both decent movies.
Well, that's why you're giving out $40 bills.
And, yeah, the other nominees for Best Actor were Michael Keaton, Bradley Cooper, Steve Carell, Benedict Cumberbatch, and Eddie Redmayne.
Right.
And I honestly believed my own bullshit last week that the Anglophile vote was going to get split between Eddie Redmayne and Benedict Cumberbatch, and Cradley Booper was going to take home the Best Actor award.
Yeah, I think like the thing I enjoy the most about these Oscars is that how badly American Sniper got shut the fuck out. Yeah. Man, am I thrilled that happened.
It got best sound mixing or sound editing.
That is all it got.
One of those,
too. Let me look at my list, but keep talking so there's not dead air. Yeah. Sound editing, it got.
And I'm not going to argue that because the sound editing was good in that film, mm-hmm. but that movie just was undeserving of all the nominations it got. And
they
astounded me that it got so many.
Again, I've yet to watch it, but... I had heard so much good things about Bradley Cooper's performance, and last night when they played his clip, you know, they played clips for the actors. That was the first time I had really seen him in motion, and I was shocked. And I think Bradley Cooper is a good actor.
Yes, he is.
But the accent he's doing, we're just like, come on down, Ma. I'm going to shoot me a gun and put on my big hat. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, he's doing a Yosemite Sam type thing.
You varmint?
He's shooting holes through boots and stuff.
Drinking sarsaparilla.
Yeah, it's not his best performance, and why he was even up for Best Actor, I'll never know.
I also loved the minute American Sniper didn't win Best Picture, Twitter has just been slowly going in. The people who loved it have just been like, how could the Academy not give
un-American
our favorite human being Donald?
And that's why I love that Citizen Four won too, because it's like fuck you and fuck all that.
The most relevant movie critic Donald Trump said,
"Yes, the man with the tiniest mouth on the planet."
I believe his quote was something like, "The Oscars are broken, just like our president." Like, all right, good work.
That's so funny in its absurdity.
That's everything he says.
I was also thrilled that Oscar-winning film Interstellar took home the Oscar for Best Visual Design.
Yes.
Best movie everyone likes to pretend is bad, but it's really not.
Excellent film. Best Visual Effects it won.
Yeah.
People were even upset about that. After
the Baby Boy movies, I was so worried that they would beat this out, and they didn't. This movie is fucking phenomenal to look at.
At the very least, I feel like you have to admit the effects in this are good, but nope. When it won, people were saying, why didn't the Dawn of the Apes win? And you know what? I like Dawn of the Apes, but just shut up.
Not once did I believe that I was in
yes.
a world of ape people.
Yeah, I did. Those ape effects, gorgeous. They look great, but no, it's clear they're not real apes.
Whereas Interstellar, I believed this world. It was a very real world.
Worlds, plural.
Yes, worlds.
He creates entire universes in this movie, and people still want to shit on it and be like, it shouldn't. Give it to the ape movie. Blah. That's how they talk, by the way.
Also, best makeup. There were only three nominees, but I really thought Guardians of the Galaxy was going to win because that was some excellent makeup in Guardians. But wow, Grand Budapest Hotel took that too. Oh, I was thrilled too.
Yeah, I won't complain.
I just thought it was shocking. Yeah.
Although I did think... maybe Foxcatcher would win for turning Steve Carell into Mr. Burns from The Simpsons.
They turned him into Oswald Cobblepot.
That got shut out, too. I don't think that got anything.
Not a one.
Yeah.
Which I'm not certain that it should have.
I'm not either. I'm not as blown away as Foxcatcher. And the fact that they went and nominated Carell for Best Actor for that, it soured
that me. The wrong way.
Yeah, it soured me on that movie in general because there's no... Even though his performance was good,
love that movie. That's a movie I'll watch over and over again once it comes out on Blu-ray. But that Best Acting nomination for Carell really, really put me cold to that film.
And as we said in our predictions episode, it by nominating him, it robs the spot for either Jake Gyllenhaal, who should have been nominated, David Oyelowo, who should have been nominated and won, and Ralph Fiennes, who also should have been nominated and won. All three of those men should have been nominated and also won somehow.
That's impossible, Chris.
I know, but I'm a dreamer. Some may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I believe that's from a Wings song.
Yes, that's Ringo Starr.
From Octopus's Garden.
Look, The real Oscar goes to David Oyelowo's suit, which was
amazing. That was a nice suit.
Not everyone could pull that off, but he could.
What's the over-under on that suit? 5,000 is the middle ground.
Dollars?
Yes.
No, that thing was...
5,000 quid.
That was much more than a $5,000 suit.
Okay. It was one tuppence. All right, so...
Dave, how long will it take for you to get that exact suit?
I will have a similar suit, much poorer in quality.
Yes. Yeah.
The thread count will be much lower. 2 is the thread count.
Made by the finest worms. Not silkworms, just worms will make Dave's suit.
Good Lord.
They're all just wiggling all over the suit as he wears it.
Okay, so how are we going to wrap up this Oscar talk?
I just want to mention, I did love the... Let me try and pronounce his name and fucking make an ass of myself. Powell Palowalski.
Yes,
is that how is it pronounced?
Yes, right. Another wonderful speech.
His the director of Ida. Yeah, the director of Ida. He won for best foreign film, and right off the bat, his speech was great because he just goes up there and he's saying how shocking it is that just a small, quiet movie wins an Oscar because the Oscars are just so bombastic. And as everyone is familiar with, when speeches go too long, the orchestra tries to play them off the stage.
Yeah.
Just saying like, oh, you know, you have to leave. And he was having none of it. He just kept talking. And that was great. At the same time, I feel like it set a bad precedent because after he did it, everyone did it.
Yeah.
And it made
immediately.
Yes.
Immediately. The next winner did it.
And like, I was fine with him doing it. But after like the 10th person did it, I was like,
there's a reason we do this.
Yeah.
Get off the stage.
The other people tried at the end talking about really serious subjects as they were getting played off. So then the music would die down because the Oscar people were like, all right, we don't want to look like assholes playing them off while they're talking about suicide.
Which is a clever angle to take.
That was a little upsetting. The Crisis Hotline best documentary short. The filmmaker, she was talking about how her son committed suicide, and right away the music started playing, and it was like, and it then instantly died down.
Yeah. You embarrassed yourselves.
And then Neil Patrick Harris made a joke about her dress having balls on it, which was not the best timing after.
Also, not funny. Perhaps if it were funny.
Yeah.
At the same time, he's there to.
Yeah, he's trying to lighten
funny.
The mood. Yeah. I get why.
It's the Oscars, and everyone doesn't want to be. I mean, suicide was mentioned quite a few times last night.
There's a lot of, I was mentioning it at my house as I watched it, saying, I wish I had committed suicide.
We needed a little Seth MacFarlane, in my opinion.
No.
Oh.
Well, unless you mean his suicide, then yes, I fully endorse that.
All right. So, I mean, I don't have much more to say about this year's Oscars. It was a boring show.
Man, was it.
I'm pleased with most of the winners.
Yeah.
Did you want to give a little nod to Oscar glory of past?
Yeah, let's do that.
Days of old.
Yes, so days of yore.
We won't stretch all the way back.
Me? Mine?
Yeah.
Or yours?
Daves of yours. We won't stretch all the way back into history. Let's talk about the last 10 years.
Okay.
If you guys had to pick one film that you think is your favorite Oscar, best picture winner in the last 10 years.
Best picture or just Oscar?
Just Oscar winner.
Okay. I guess I hear Dave click-clacking away, which means he's ill-prepared.
He's putting his tap shoes on.
I'll go first.
I'm just making sure I didn't miss anything.
Okay. Dave, well, let me rephrase that. Dave, take those castanets off. Okay. It's really messing me up.
Are you saying best picture or any category?
If you want to make it that broad and do any category, go for it.
Because I do have any category.
All right, then.
I'll still go first.
Yeah, do it.
It's a tie for me.
All right.
It's a bow tie.
It's a bolo tie, I believe. With the
yes, Tim McGraw was wearing a bolo tie last night.
I wish he had choked on it.
Okay, so my favorite Oscar win of the last 10 years is a tie between Christoph Waltz for Inglourious Basterds and Marion Cotillard. Mm. I don't know how to pronounce her name. I'm sorry.
That's close enough.
Cotillard. For Best Actress in La Vie en Rose.
As Talia al Ghul.
No, that's incorrect. Oh. She plays Edith Piaf.
Oh, yes.
I think the reason these two are my favorite wins are because the movies would be so much less with any other actor in that role.
Mm.
Christoph Waltz, it was the first time I had ever even seen him in a film, and he steals the show as the disgusting Nazi leader.
Yes.
Well, not leader, but the leader of this film.
The Jew Hunter is his character.
Yeah. And he's just menacing at every turn. He at once skeeves you out and then also makes you fearful of the next thing he's going to say or do. It's a horrifying
while making you laugh.
That opening scene is one of the the best openings of any film I've ever seen. And just the way it's shot and acted is just fantastic.
And it's why I will stick up for Tarantino anytime anybody calls him derivative, because he's just a craftsman filmmaker.
That was the film that made me like Tarantino again, because it came out after Death Proof, and I was like, I guess Tarantino's washed up, but that movie, I was like, oh, never mind.
He was just scrubbing behind his ears, it seems.
Bastards is my favorite Tarantino
it's
movie.
It's so good. I think it might be mine, too. No. Maybe after Reservoir Dogs.
Mine is Four Rooms. No, it's not.
But the Marion Cotillard performance in La Cotillard. Vie en Rose. Cotillard. for La Vie en Rose is absolutely beautiful. Yeah. It's one of the best performances I think I've ever seen, let alone the last 10 years. She completely disappears into this role as though you're watching a true documentary footage of this woman. And it's tragic, and it's a gorgeous film to begin with, but this performance just sells everything about it.
Nice.
So, yeah, those are my picks. Those Christoph picks. Waltz and Marion Cotillard.
For me, as far as a best picture, mine would be No Country for Old Men. And the year that it was kind of like a tight year, because that was up against There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
And I love There Will Be Blood, too. And that sort of ties into why another reason I just don't like the Oscars, because I hate that those two films, which are two of the best films of the last 10 years, had to be pitted against each other. Yeah. Like, why do they have to be? Can't we like both? But I think No Country for Old Men is such a unique, quiet, nihilistic sort of film. And for that to just win Best Picture, it's not...
It's strange that won.
It's not common.
Shocked.
Yeah, that's such a... The ending of that movie, I remember that last shot of Tommy Lee Jones, and it just ends. Everyone in my theater was like, what's happening? Yeah. And just for that to win Best Picture, it's just phenomenal to me, because I love that movie. I love Cormac McCarthy, and it's just great. And
that is one of the most bizarre Oscar Best Picture wins, I think, of all time.
Yeah, as much as I love that movie, I didn't expect it to win just because it's so dark. The bad guy, quote unquote, gets away. Nothing. He has no come up. He breaks his arm. There's no other comeuppance, and that's so unheard of for that to win. My other pick would be Lupita Nyong'o winning Best Actress for 12 Years a Slave, just because
that was great.
That was an actress, for me at least, she came out of nowhere, and that performance was so raw and powerful, and just her acceptance speech was so genuine. Mm-hmm. It choked me up a little. It was just so nice to have this actress just seemingly come out of nowhere and just give this great performance, and she became instantly loved. Everyone just we all love this actress, and I'm disappointed she hasn't been in a lot since. I want her to be in. I'm excited that she's going to be in Star Wars. That's such a huge film.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to see what her part is in that. So those would be my two picks of the last 10 years. David?
This is a strange one, but my favorite Oscar win of the last 10 years, is that what we're saying?
Yes.
Years?
Yeah.
Happened last year, and it was when Spike Jonze won Best Original Screenplay for Her.
That is a good pick.
Because that movie, it has such an original screenplay, not to pun it up, but it's just
Well, you're not punning it up, you're just repeating it verbatim.
You're just saying words.
It's such a tight, intimate story about the future that at times feels like a horror movie without ever drifting into that realm, but it also breaks your heart and makes you think about things that you don't want to think about. It's just such a great screenplay, and that's probably my favorite.
What's really special about that screenplay is that when you just read the synopsis for that movie, it sounds like something you never want to watch. It sounds like it's going to be corny and just this tone-deaf version of the future where we're making love to machines.
Right.
But that screenplay is so smart, clever, different than anything I've ever seen before, that it completely wipes away any type of preconceived notions about the film, and you just let the movie take you where it's taking you, and it's a fucking great movie.
That's such a good point, that the synopsis and the central idea of the film is so absurd and kind of corny. It reminded me, that movie In a World that's about the trailers, which I've never seen, but the idea of that movie feels like how the synopsis of Her felt before I saw it. Like, this is going to be stupid. But
I have seen that movie, and it's just as bad as the the synopsis sounds.
But it's like, oh, a guy falls in love with his Siri. Like, yeah. That's what everybody was saying.
Yeah, I remember, like, when the first, like, synopsis came out, it was like a joke. Like, what? What is this?
Because it sounds terrible.
Yeah.
It truly sounds terrible. But that movie is so special, and it's the screenplay at the heart of it. But it's also the what's her name?
Samantha.
Scarlett Johansson, yeah. Performance, the voice acting. That's another big part right. of it.
And Amy Adams is great in that.
Yes, she is.
It's a great cast.
The whole cast is great. The world that Jones built
that's
beautiful.
That's one of those few films that so effortlessly builds an entire universe. And it's not even like a fanciful universe, like, say, Jupiter Ascending, where there are dog right. men. It's like, it's a realistic universe that's like built out of not like
you
want to
see
cloth.
You want to see more movies that take place in that world.
Yeah,
like, that's
it's
how
hard
good
sci-fi.
Of
it's sci-fi, but it's grounded.
Yeah,
much like Moon. Moon is it's sort of a ludicrous thing to read the synopsis, but right. once you watch it, you're like, oh no, this is absolutely believable. That's a good pick.
Yeah. So now we're going to go with our disappointments.
Yeah, no, it's
Oscar snubs.
Yeah, the worst Oscar snubs of the last 10 years. Jeff, you got one?
Yeah, I do. I do got one.
Yeah, lay it on me.
I'm going to go with The Master not being nominated for Best Picture.
It wasn't? I thought it was.
I don't believe it was.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh.
My pick was Philip Seymour Hoffman not winning Best Actor against Daniel Day-Lewis, right? That's who he was up against.
Right, for Lincoln.
Yeah, which, looking back on those two performances, he did a great making up the new Lincoln, not a realistic version of Lincoln, but Philip Seymour Hoffman in The Master is just...
At the same time, do you feel like that decision is peppered by the fact that Philip Seymour Hoffman died after that? I mean... Because I'm the same way where at the time I was, even though I think Philip Seymour Hoffman's performance in The Master is phenomenal, I was happy Day-Lewis won. But now that it's, now that what has happened, I'm sort of like, man, I wish Philip Seymour Hoffman have taken that home.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because, it's similar to Heath Ledger winning Best Supporting Actor. Mm-hmm. That's such a great thing that he won that.
Right.
And I don't know why, because we already talked about the Oscars being meaningless, but him winning that Best Supporting Actor for The Joker, it just feels right. And I think that this would have felt right.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Well, what bothered me about The Master not even being nominated for Best Picture is that it was nominated for Best Directing.
I just Googled it to make sure you weren't being silly, Jeff, but you're right. It was not nominated for Best Picture, and that's shocking.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I don't either.
I'm like a little speechless at that. That's weird, huh? I'm kind of sad.
Yeah,
you know?
The Master is probably my favorite movie. I would have to say.
Really?
Yeah.
Never. Wow, that's a bold.
And for that to not even be nominated, it's
insane.
That's fucking bizarre.
My snub is similar. It is the lack of nomination for
E.T.
Yes,
the extraterrestrial. Yeah.
Inside Llewyn Davis.
That's not wrong, Dave.
Inside Llewyn Davis, the Coen Brothers film, not getting a Best Picture nomination or Best Actor nomination for Oscar Isaac in the lead role.
I was going to pick that, but I knew one of you would, so I didn't. That bothered me so much.
I can't, at the very least, actor. How do you not nominate that performance for Best Actor? You don't have to even give him the award to win, but just to not nominate him it's staggering that
even
he didn't
when
do
he's
that.
Saying nothing.
Yeah,
Oscar Isaac is acting.
Was that nominated for any of the songs?
I don't think. I mean, I kind of feel like the Mr. Kennedy one was the goofy one. I think that was nominated.
No, because they would have had to have performed it, and I don't remember Oscar Isaac performing at the Oscars, and that's fucking ridiculous too. Those songs are amazing. Yeah. You can just listen, like,
and it robbed us of the opportunity to call him Oscars Isaac.
Well, I'm gonna call him that anyway.
Take it away, Dave.
It's interesting that we just mentioned Her, The Master, and Inside Llewyn Davis. Mm. Probably the best three movies of the last 10 years, without a doubt.
Inside Llewyn Davis would definitely be in my top tier of the 21st century.
2013 was an absolutely incredible year for films, much more so than 2014.
Yeah, 2014 was a great year, 2013 was
it was a special year.
Insane.
Yeah.
So I don't think we'll see another year like that for a while.
I don't know. I mean, Chappie's coming out this year.
2015 does not.
Mordecai already came out this year.
Yeah, Mordecai came out. It did boffo box office,
just
I believe.
Imagine how many awards that's going to take home. Yeah.
I was also kind of upset that Oscar-winning film Interstellar was not nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, you really thought that that was going to be nominated for Best Picture?
I knew it wouldn't be just because...
This is my favorite movie of the year.
I don't know. I really liked Interstellar. I wasn't as blown away by it as I wanted to be. I still think it's a great movie. But I also feel like the Academy just does not like Christopher Nolan for some reason.
Yeah,
just,
it is odd.
He's just one of those directors they just don't care for. They love Clint Eastwood. Go figure, but...
Boy, was he another old man that wasn't having any last night.
Well,
he was not in a good mood.
I don't think he was there. I think they hired Imhotep the Mummy as his seat filler.
Yes, that was Boris Karloff's sarcophagus.
He was burning some tannis leaves. He had the big dog mask thing on. Clint Eastwood couldn't be here.
Yes, it was Anubis. He was busy weighing Neil Patrick's heart against the weight of a feather. It was quite a ceremony.
He sent his proxy, the Mummy, in his place.
All right, so are we done with Oscar talk?
Yeah.
Because I know I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm done.
All right.
I'm spent, if you will.
So yeah, so that's it, everybody. The Oscars, they're over. We'll talk about the next Oscars in episode 100, I guess. Yes.
So let's move on to movie recommendations.
Let's do it. It's twice as long as I remember it.
Oh, I love that so much. So much. All right. So who wants to go first?
I'll go.
Okay, good.
I'll go, everyone. So my pick is the film Frozen, and it's not the Disney one.
Ah,
everyone calm down.
It's the Pixar one.
Yes. So Frozen is a film from director Adam Green. He directed the Hatchet films, which they're whatever. I don't really care that much about them. He has a film out this year. It came out last week called Digging Up the Marrow. There's a review of it on our website, cutprintfilm.com, which we somehow forgot to plug at the top of the show. We have a website called cutprintfilm.com.
Oh, we'll get to it.
This film, it's about three friends. They're on a ski trip. They're in college. It's two male friends who have been friends since grade school, and the one's new girlfriend who's sort of coming in between them. He's sort of robbing them of their bromance, if you will.
Oh, that's tragic.
Yeah. So they
can't have that.
Yeah. So they go on. They're on a ski trip, and they don't have enough money for a lift ticket. So the girl sort of flirts with the guy running the lift and gets them on the lift. But as a result, they're not officially on any sort of list, and a storm is coming in. So they shut down the ski, the mountain for the night, and these three friends, they're trapped on the lift. And it's late at night, they're hanging in the air, they're thinking the mountain is closed for an entire week. So they're like, we have to do something. We can't just sit up here for a week, we'll freeze to death. So the whole film is just basically about them trying to get off this ski lift. It's a very simple film, it's self-contained. And that synopsis, it just sounds fucking stupid. And you're going to think...
That's why I've never watched
it. And when I sat down, I avoided it for years. And then a friend of mine said, you should watch it. It's actually better than you think it's going to be. And it's a clever movie. It's really well written. These three characters, at the start of the film, you think they're going to be like annoying college jerk-off characters. But it's so well written that as the film progresses, you learn that each of them has depth, actually. And the relationships that develop between the three of them, it's unique. It's really well acted. But the best thing, the best aspect of this film is that it's brutal. It's there's a lot of I don't want to give them away, but there's a lot of things that happens to these three that it's sickeningly violent. If you don't expect it to come, it's that sort of violence where it's brutal, but you can't help but like laugh at it at how just insane it is.
Okay. Do they go over any moguls?
No.
Down a black diamond.
You mean like Uncle Moneybags from the Monopoly game?
Where does the camera sit? Is it like fixed or is it?
No, it's constantly moving. It's not cinematic? Like a found footage movie.
Okay.
It's a movie. It's shot like a film.
Oh,
it's
good.
That's another thing. For some reason, a lot of people, when I tell them that they think it's going to be like a shitty found footage, like security cameras are filming, it's not like that. It's a movie.
I think the location's so fixed that it seems like something that would be.
Right. But no, it's, I mean, for a low budget film, they. They went all out. I'm sure they rented cranes and stuff to do this because the camera's always, you know, moving or elevated. It's just, it's a well-made.
You can put cameras on the backs of birds.
Yeah,
that fly
believe
around?
It or not, it's really crazy.
That was a crane joke.
Yeah,
I didn't like it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm always up for a good crane.
You want to re-record that crane joke?
I don't want to talk about it again.
So yeah, the film is 2010's Frozen, directed by Adam Green.
Please welcome the wickedly talented one and only Adele Dazeem.
I got chilled just hearing. We didn't talk about that. John Travolta creepily touching everyone.
And he wore his hair wig. That was nice.
His hair wig. As opposed to his chin wig.
Yes. It looked like he was wearing his fake face, too. Yeah.
Well, he looks excellent.
He was wearing Nicolas Cage's face from the film Face Off.
Dave, you want to go?
Yeah, I'll go. I'm going to recommend a movie you cannot see yet.
Well, that's
absolutely
unhelpful.
Worthless for everyone. Thank you, Dave.
I haven't made it yet. It's my film, The Dave Costell Story.
You will be able to watch this on video on demand on Friday, February 27th.
That's this week.
Friday, yes.
I'll be busy watching House of Cards. Sorry.
It's My Life, directed by Nikolai Vinding Refn. Directed by his wife. It seems like from that title it's going to be more about his wife, but it's actually more about Nikolai himself. Okay. Directing Only God Forgives. His wife, Liv Kornfixen.
Kornfixen. I'm almost positive that's not correct.
Kornfixen. Not Kornfixen.
Honey, what's for dinner?
Nut and Kornfixen.
So I love Refn and all his movies, particularly Only God Forgives, which is a movie that a lot of people hate.
Dave, how are you fixed for corn? That's what we want to know.
So this documentary is an awesome...
Oh, wait, no. I just thought her name is Corn Poppin'. I'm sorry.
Is an awesome look into the...
I'm sorry.
The process he goes through while making... while struggling to make Only God Forgives.
Okay.
It's awesome.
God Forgives, because it came out so soon after Drive, and Drive is a very popular film for him, and Only God Forgives is like his In Utero to Nevermind, basically, where it's just, oh, what is this?
And it's awesome because you think like he's some kind of genius mastermind, but there's scenes of him in front of his storyboard, which he has up in a hotel, and he's just like holding his head going, oh, people are going to hate this. It's not. He's like, it's not as commercial as Drive, and his wife... She offers him no emotional support throughout this. Every time...
Oh, she's too busy fixing that corn again.
Every time he's like, oh, I like it better than Drive. Isn't it better than Drive? She just doesn't answer him. And he's like, isn't it better than Drive? He just keeps asking her. And she's like, well, it's not as commercial.
That reminds me, not to interrupt, but I'm going to. That reminds me of a scene from that Metallica documentary.
Some Kind of Monster?
Yes, where they're recording that awful album, Saint Anger, and their drummer, Lars Ulrich, shows it to his dad. And his dad just looks at him and goes, I think you should delete this.
There's some awesome moments in this. One of them is Nikolai Vinding Refn is driving onto set, and he's in his car, and he's driving past all of this shit they have set up for the movie, and he just says to himself, like, oh, why does it have to be so huge? Like, he's almost, like, annoyed that there's so much going into making the movie because he knows that it's not going to be as well-received
as
he wants it to be, but it's awesome to see someone making something even though they know that other people aren't going to like it.
I like that self-awareness aspect. I love it when a filmmaker is self-aware and not doesn't have their head up their own ass,
right,
much like a Michael Bay or a James Cameron.
Well, there's an awesome moment towards the end where he's getting he's literally on his phone reading bad reviews for Only God Forgives. One of them's from that guy who made that horrible comment about Amy Schumer last week.
Jeff Wells.
So it makes him look
utter piece of shit,
even more like an asshole. But while he's doing this, Yoda Roski calls him on the phone and just tells him how amazing his movie is. And he hangs up and he goes, he's just like, oh, well, that's all that matters is that Yoda Roski liked it.
A lunatic.
Well, that's his hero. So like, if you're making something that your hero loves, it's like, who gives a fuck about anyone else?
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna watch this.
My hero is this Italian sub.
And
what do you think, Italian sub?
It's pronounced gyro.
Well, we could be heroes or gyros.
I do love a lamb gyro with tzatziki sauce.
Only in Greek Town.
But we're actually going to have an interview this week with Nicholas Winding Refn and his wife, Mrs. Corn Poppin.
Yeah.
I hope we get her name right in the interview and don't look like utter fools.
I do too. Hey, speaking of utter fools, let me hit this.
Please welcome the wickedly talented one and only Adele Dazeem.
God, that I forgot that wickedly part he did.
It really makes it.
I hope he dies. No, that's mean. That's mean.
That's an awful thing to say.
That's a bit mean. I like John Travolta.
I do too. So my pick this week is tying in with the Oscars. It's a film directed by scampy little director Morten Tildum.
Ah, Mortimer Snerd himself.
Snerd man.
Morten Tildum directed The Imitation Game, which was up for Best Picture.
And it shouldn't have been.
No. But this film is from 2011. It is called Headhunters, and it's a foreign film.
Well, watch your head.
Yes, watch out.
So you're saying Mortimer Snerd made a good film?
Yes, this is a good film.
There's not like stock footage in this film? Or
no.
Isn't Jamie Lannister in it?
Yes, he is.
Yes!
Nicolaj Coster-Waldau, who's Jamie Lannister from Game of Thrones, is in it, and it stars him and an actor named Axel Henny, who was
Axel
in...
Axel Rose?
No, not Axel Rose.
Axel Foley from
Axel Henny, he was in 2014's Hercules with The Rock, and he was also in a film called Pioneer about submarine diving.
I haven't seen
team.
That, but I'm familiar with it.
He's a very good actor.
I watched some of that this year until
the screener crapped out. Yeah, I remember that. That's why we didn't have a review for Pioneer.
Sorry, Pioneer.
The screener fell apart. So what this is Axel Henny plays a character named Roger, who is a... not only is he a corporate headhunter, like he finds the best man for these giant companies, but he's also living well beyond his means because his wife is beautiful and he thinks she wants all this money. So he has a $30 million house, but he can't afford it. So what he does is he steals fine art from people's homes and then sells it on the black market.
Is this on Netflix?
Yes, it is on Netflix.
I've seen it on there, yeah.
And I know this sounds silly, this plot synopsis, but... it's really, really fun. It's a fun movie, and it's directed very similarly to The Imitation Game, except this film doesn't take itself seriously at all. There's some Chekhov guns going off, and if you've ever watched a movie before, you'll notice them, but it's just fun to see them go off. It's fun to watch this movie come together, even though you know where all the pieces are going to fall. It's just neat watching it happen. And there's some really, really, really good performances. Axel Henny's great. Nicolaj Coster-Waldau's great. I forget the actress name that plays Roger's wife in this film. She's terrific. It's a really, really great looking movie. And it's just a fun heist movie.
Jeff, would you be interested to learn that this is the second entry in the Harry Hole series?
Is it really?
Yes.
Is Harry Hole a character in this film?
No. The Headhunters is the second entry in the Harry Hole series, and maybe they cut him for the movie.
Maybe they changed the name because that's a ridiculous name.
There's nobody named Harry Hole
but,
in this film.
Headhunters was written by Joe Nesbo, the guy who wrote Snowman.
That I know.
So, good old Nesbo.
So Harry Hole will return this year in the Snowman.
No, it's not happening.
I mean, there's a police detective that is...
Yeah, that's Harry Hole.
He's in...
You're just guessing.
No, that's incorrect. It's not Harry Hole. He's sort of like a famous police detective.
Yeah, Harry Hole, he's on the case.
Okay, good for him. Good for him. But he exists only on the outside margins of this film. He's in maybe four scenes.
That's how popular Harry Hole is. He's barely in his own film.
Yeah, put Harry in your own hole, Dave. I don't want to hear any of it.
Well...
to put a pin in that.
I could have talked about Harry Hole all night.
I know you could.
But it's almost 2 a.m.
We know you're a hole head. So yeah, Cut Print Film, that's us. We have a website. It's called cutprintfilm.com. You've got movie reviews. You've got editorials. You've got interviews. You've got this very podcast. Yes. We've got it all and then some.
Yes, we've got it all going on.
Right.
And like you said, we will have an interview with Nicholas Winding Refn.
And his wife, I promise you, we'll get her name right.
Liv Corfixen.
Okay.
I did it in an accent.
I loved it.
Thanks.
Pretty good, Dave.
Uncanny.
You can also check out some friends of ours, joystickjerks.com. They do a video game podcast. It's very, very funny. Very professional. I'm just kidding. There's lots of shit talk and farts. Also, Antifanboy.com. They do a lot of comic book movies, video games, all sorts of stuff from that aspect of pop culture.
Video comics.
How many farts do they have?
118 farts per episode.
That's a lot. It's
crazy.
Per capita farts.
Farts are happening. Who else can you go
Hold
see?
Hold on, let me open this envelope.
Oh, the award for worst podcast host.
The return of Mick Foley.
And the award for best podcaster goes to Dave Costa.
Whoa, none of us saw that coming.
I want to thank God.
Podcast Twitter is going to go insane over this.
I'm going to run you through with this sword. You can also check out our podcast network, More Like Radio. There's about 1,700 other podcasts on that network. Listen to them all, please.
at once.
If you have 50 hours, you can listen to a full year of Cut Print Film starting at the end of this podcast.
That's crazy.
Actually, you need more than 50 hours because we're very verbose.
Yes, we love hearing one another talk.
But you can't find the first hour, so...
Don't even try.
one day somebody's actually going to ask us, hey, can I get that first bootleg episode?
$80.
And I'll say no.
And we'll be sitting behind them in a car and stab them with an awl, like Maury in Goodfellas for asking that question.
So, there's a lot coming up this week. Last week was a little light on reviews because nothing really came out.
It was Oscar week. Everyone was getting ready.
This week a lot comes out.
Yeah, we have, I believe, 70,000 reviews.
Yeah, it's going to be a good week here at Cut Print Film. And we hope you stick around.
Yeah, and go to iTunes. Give this podcast a 5-star rating. Do it. Leave a comment. Leave comments anywhere. There's Twitter, at Cut Print Film. We have a Facebook. And just the website in general, we have the discuss comment section.
Yeah.
Get in there. Tell us you love us.
And please, don't use any harsh language, like, God darn it. Yeah. That would upset my mother.
Or, this sucks.